Dr. Hill. I think fundamentally we're reaching the same conclusion about the survival benefit. We're both finding a significant effect on survival. Dr. Lowry. No, I'm grading my evidence. I'm saying I'm sure of this evidence. I'm saying I'm absolutely sure it prevents deaths. There is nothing as effective as this treatment. What is your reluctance? Whose conclusion is that? Hill then complains again that outsiders are influencing him. Dr. Lowry, you keep referring to other people. It's like you don't trust yourself. If you were to trust yourself, you would know that you have made an error and you need to correct it, because you know in your heart that this treatment prevents death. Dr. Hill, well, I know for a fact that the data right now is not going to get the drug approved. Dr. Lowry, but Andy, know this will come out. It will come out that there were all these barriers to the truth being told to the public and to the evidence being presented. So please, this is your opportunity just to acknowledge the truth in your review. Change your conclusions and come on board with this Cochrane review, which will be definitive. It will be the review that shows the evidence and gives the proof. This was the consensus on Wednesday night's meeting with 20 experts. Hill protests that NIH will not agree to recommend IVM. Dr. Lowry, yeah, because the NIH is owned by the vaccine lobby. Dr. Hill, that's not something I know about. Dr. Lowry, well, all I'm saying is this smacks of corruption, and you are being played. Dr. Hill, I don't think so. Dr. Lowry, well then, you have no excuse, because your work in that review is flawed. It's rushed. It is not properly put together. Dr. Lowry points out that Hill's study ignores a host of clinical outcomes that affect patients. She scolds Hill for ignoring the beneficial effects of IVM as prophylaxis, its effect on speed to PCR negativity, on the need for mechanical ventilation, on reduced admissions to ICUs, and other outcomes that are clinically meaningful. She adds, "This is bad research. Bad research. So at this point, I don't know. You seem like a nice guy, but I am really, really worried about you." Dr. Hill, okay, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult situation. Dr. Lowry, no, you might be in a difficult situation. I'm not, because I have no paymaster. I can tell the truth. How can you deliberately try and mess it up, you know? Dr. Hill, it's not messing it up. It's saying that we need a short time to look at some more studies. Dr. Lowry, so how long are you going to let people carry on dying unnecessarily? Up to you. What is the timeline that you've allowed for this then? Dr. Hill, well, I think that it goes to WHO and the NIH and the FDA and the EMEA. They've got to decide when they think enough's enough. Dr. Lowry, how do they decide? Because there's nobody giving them good evidence synthesis, because yours is certainly not good. Dr. Hill, well, when yours comes out, which will be in the very near future, at the same time there'll be other trials producing results, which will nail it with a bit of luck, and we'll be there. Dr. Lowry, it's already nailed. Dr. Hill, no, that's not the view of the WHO and the FDA. Dr. Lowry, you'd rather risk loads of people's lives. Do you know if you and I stood together on this, we could present a united front, and we could get this thing. We could make it happen. We could save lives. We could prevent British National Health Service doctors and nurses, people, from getting infected. We could prevent the elderly from dying. These are studies conducted around the world in several different countries, and they're all saying the same thing. Plus, there's all sorts of other evidence to show that it works. Randomized controlled trials do not need to be the be-all and end-all. But even based on the randomized controlled trials, it is clear that ivermectin works. It prevents deaths, and it prevents harms, and it improves outcomes for people. I can see we're getting nowhere because you have an agenda, whether you like it or not, whether you admit to it or not, you have an agenda. And the agenda is to kick this down the road as far as you can. So, we are trying to save lives. That's what we do. I'm a doctor, and I'm going to save as many lives as I can. And I'm going to do that through getting the message out on ivermectin. Okay. Unfortunately, your work is going to impair that, and you seem to be able to bear the burden of many, many deaths, which I cannot do. Then, she asks again, would you tell me? I would like to know who pays you as a consultant through WHO. Dr. Hill, it's Unitaid. Dr. Lawry, all right. So who helped to... Whose conclusions are those on the review that you've done? Who is not listed as an author? Who's actually contributed? Dr. Hill, well, I mean, I don't really want to get into, Unitaid, Dr. Lawry. I think that it needs to be clear. I would like to know who are these other voices that are in your paper that are not acknowledged? Does Unitaid have a say? Do they influence what you write? Dr. Hill, Unitaid has a say in the conclusions of the paper. Yeah. Dr. Lawry, okay. So who is it in Unitaid then? Who is giving you opinions on your evidence? Dr. Hill, well, it's just the people there. I don't, Dr. Lawry. So they have a say in your conclusions? Dr. Hill, yeah. Dr. Lawry, could you please give me a name of someone in Unitaid I could speak to so that I can share my evidence and hope to try and persuade them to understand it? Dr. Hill, oh, I'll have a think about who to offer you with a name, but I mean, this is very difficult because I'm, you know, I've got this role where I'm supposed to produce this paper, and we're in a very difficult, delicate balance. Dr. Lawry interjects, who are these people? Who are these people saying this? Dr. Hill, yeah, it's a very strong lobby, Dr. Lawry. Okay, look, I think I can see we're kind of at a dead end because you seem to have a whole lot of excuses, but you know that to justify bad research practice. So I'm really, really sorry about this, Andy. I really, really wish, and you've explained quite clearly to me in both what you've been saying and in your body language, that you're not entirely comfortable with your conclusions, that you're in a tricky position because of whatever influence people are having on you, and including the people who have paid you and who have basically written that conclusion for you. Dr. Hill, you've just got to understand I'm in a difficult position. I'm trying to steer a middle ground, and it's extremely hard. Dr. Lawry, yeah, middle ground. The middle ground is not a middle ground. You've taken a position right to the other extreme, calling for further trials that are going to kill people. So this will come out, and you will be culpable. And I can't understand why you don't see that, because the evidence is there, and you are not just denying it. But your work's actually actively obfuscating the truth, and this will come out. So I'm really sorry. As I say, you seem like a nice guy, but I think you've just kind of been misled somehow. Hill promised he would do everything in his power to get ivermectin approved if she would give him 6 weeks. Dr. Hill, well, what I hope is that this stalemate that we're in doesn't last very long. It lasts a matter of weeks, and I guarantee I will push for this to last for as short amount of time as possible. Dr. Lawry, so how long do you think the stalemate will go on for? How long do you think you will be paid to make the stalemate go on? Dr. Hill, from my side, okay. I think end of February We will be there 6 weeks. Dr. Lowry, how many people die every day? Dr. Hill, oh, sure. I mean, you know, 15,000 people a day. Dr. Lowry, 15,000 people a day times 6 weeks. Because at this rate, all other countries are getting ivermectin except the UK and the USA. Because the UK and the USA and Europe are owned by the vaccine lobby. Dr. Hill, my goal is to get the drug approved and to do everything I can to get it approved so that it reaches the maximum. Dr. Lowry, you're not doing everything you can, because everything you can would involve saying to those people who are paying you, I can see this prevents deaths, so I'm not going to support this conclusion anymore, and I'm going to tell the truth. Dr. Hill, what? I've got to do my responsibilities to get as much support as I can to get this drug approved as quickly as possible. Dr. Lowry, well, you're not going to get it approved the way you've written that conclusion. You've actually shot yourself in the foot, and you've shot us all in the foot. All of everybody trying to do something good, you have actually completely destroyed it. Dr. Hill, okay, well, that's where we'll... I guess we'll have to agree to differ. Dr. Lowry, yeah, well, I don't know how you sleep at night, honestly. At the conclusion of the January 14th Bird Conference, Dr. Lowry delivered a monumental closing address that should be recorded among the most important speeches in the annals of medical history. Dr. Lowry spoke out at considerable personal risk, since her livelihood and career largely rely on the very agencies she targeted for criticism. Dr. Lowry began by endorsing the miraculous efficacy of IVM. Had ivermectin been employed in 2020, when medical colleagues around the world first alerted the authorities to its efficacy, millions of lives could have been saved, and the pandemic, with all its associated suffering and loss, brought to a rapid and timely end. Dr. Lowry told the audience that the suppression of ivermectin was a signal that pharma's pervasive corruption had turned a medical cartel against patients and against humanity. The story of ivermectin has highlighted that we are at a remarkable juncture in medical history. The tools that we use to heal and our connection with our patients are being systematically undermined by relentless disinformation stemming from corporate greed. The story of ivermectin shows that we as a public have misplaced our trust in the authorities and have underestimated the extent to which money and power corrupts. Dr. Lowry called for reform of the method used to analyze scientific evidence. They who design the trials and control the data also control the outcome. So, this system of industry-led trials needs to be put to an end. Data from ongoing and future trials of novel COVID treatments must be independently controlled and analyzed. Anything less than total transparency cannot be trusted. Dr. Lowry called out the corruption of modern medicine by Big Pharma and other interests and attributed the barbaric suppression of IVM to the single-minded obsession with more profitable vaccines. Since then, hundreds of millions of people have been involved in the largest medical experiment in human history. Mass vaccination was an unproven novel therapy. Hundreds of billions will be made by Big Pharma and paid for by the public. With politicians and other non-medical individuals dictating to us what we are allowed to prescribe to the ill, we as doctors have been put in a position such that our ability to uphold the Hippocratic Oath is under attack. She hinted at Gates's role in the suppression. At this fateful juncture, we must therefore choose: will we continue to be held ransom by corrupt organizations, health authorities, Big Pharma, and billionaire sociopaths, or will we do our moral and professional duty to do no harm and always do the best for those in our care? The latter includes urgently reaching out to colleagues around the world to discuss which of our tried and tested safe older medicines can be used against COVID. Never before has our role as doctors been so important, because never before have we become complicit in causing so much harm. Finally, Dr. Lowry suggested that physicians form a new World Health Organization that represents the interests of the people, not corporations and billionaires, a people-centered organization. On October 1st, 2021, Hill resurfaced on Twitter, touting his upcoming lecture, ironically titled "Effects of Bias and Potential Medical Fraud in the Promotion of Ivermectin." Says Pierre Corey in disgust, "Andrew is apparently making a living now accusing the doctors and scientists who support ivermectin of medical fraud." Dr. Corey adds, "Hill and his backers are some of the worst people in human history. They are responsible for the deaths of millions." Andrew Hill's emergence is only one front in the war by NIH and the medical media cartel to block doctors from using IVM. FDA issued its first warning about IVM on April 10, 2020, in reaction to ivermectin studies by Australia's Monash University, and American physician Dr. Jean-Jacques Ryder claiming on its website additional testing is needed to determine whether ivermectin might be safe or effective to prevent or treat coronavirus or COVID-19. When Dr. Corey's explosive December 8, 2020 Senate testimony describing the peer-reviewed science supporting ivermectin went viral, prescriptions for ivermectin from U.S. doctors exploded. Americans were getting legitimate prescriptions filled at pharmacies, up to 88,000 scripts in a single week. The truth of the drug's benefits was going viral, and the last thing Dr. Fauci et al. Could tolerate was an effective treatment for COVID. Something needed to be done. The government moved aggressively to block its use. On December 24th, in what seemed like a trial balloon, the South African government quietly banned the importation of ivermectin. YouTube soon scrubbed Corey's video, and Facebook blocked him. Then, in March 2021, the U.S. FDA, the European Medicines Association, EMA, and the WHO issued statements advising against the use of ivermectin for COVID-19. The EMA said it should not be used at all. The WHO, echoing its strategy for tanking hydroxychloroquine, said ivermectin's use should be limited to clinical trials. The high costs of running a clinical trial and their reliance on NIH, NIAID, Gates, or pharma funding means that their results may be easily controlled. FDA issued a much firmer directive. You should not use ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID-19. Here are the FDA guidelines. The FDA has not authorized or approved ivermectin for use in preventing or treating COVID-19 in humans or animals. Ivermectin is approved for human use to treat infections caused by some parasitic worms and head lice and skin conditions like rosacea. Currently, available data do not show ivermectin is effective against COVID-19. Clinical trials assessing ivermectin tablets for the prevention or treatment of COVID-19 in people are ongoing. Taking large doses of ivermectin is dangerous. If your healthcare provider writes you an ivermectin prescription, fill it through a legitimate source, such as a pharmacy, and take it exactly as prescribed. On July 28, 2021, a front-page Wall Street Journal headline asked, "Why is the FDA attacking a safe, effective drug?" On August 16, 2021, 2 weeks after the Wall Street Journal article, CDC ordered doctors to stop prescribing IVM. On August 17, 2021, the NIAID recommended against ivermectin's use to combat the novel coronavirus. On August 26, 2021, CDC sent out an emergency warning using its Health Alert Network. In early September 2021, following the FDA, CDC, NIAID's lead, the American Medical Association, AMA, the American Pharmacists Association, APHA, and the American Society of Health System Pharmacists, ASHP, called on doctors to immediately stop prescribing ivermectin for COVID outside of clinical trials. These influential organizations are largely dependent on pharmaceutical industry largesse. On September 2, 2021, on MSNBC Tonight, Chris Hayes interviewed the president of the AMA, Dr. Gerald Harmon, who said that the AMA now advises doctors against prescribing ivermectin, except in clinical trials. He explained that the AMA is taking this unprecedented step because ivermectin isn't approved by the FDA for treatment of COVID-19. He failed to mention that up to 30% of prescriptions written by America's doctors are for off-label uses not approved by the FDA. The AMA, meanwhile, ignored the cascading toll of injuries and deaths from Big Pharma's injections, while endorsing the revolutionary notion that FDA should be the arbiter of what doctors can and cannot use to heal their patients. Physicians traditionally have had unlimited authority to prescribe FDA-approved medications for any purpose, as long as they explain the risks and benefits to their patients. Suddenly, the AMA and its industry patrons and captive regulators moved to limit the doctor's authority to treat patients. FDA has no authority to regulate the practice of medicine. As Stephen Hahn, FDA's last commissioner, no one has been appointed to the role since he left, pointed out in October 2020, off-label prescribing is between a doctor and his, her patient. The sad episode, still ongoing, raises questions one expects doctors to be asking. Is ivermectin a safe drug? Will it do harm? Are we in a situation in which authorities have not provided a proven therapeutic for COVID-19? Do treating physicians have the freedom to try medicines they have reason to believe might be helpful, particularly when there is no reason to believe the medicine will be hurtful? Doctors who answered those questions for themselves and prescribed ivermectin after early September faced growing scrutiny and heavy-handed tactics, including censorship, threats to their license and board certification, and other repressive policies from governments and medical boards. Pharmacists, including the large chains like CVS and Walmart, refused to fill prescriptions. For the first time in history, pharmacies were telling doctors what they can and cannot prescribe, says Dr. McCullough. The directives shattered the traditional sacred relationship between doctors and patients that the profession had nurtured and protected since Hippocrates. The medical profession has long told doctors that their single obligation is to their patients. The AMA's declaration helped march doctors into their new role as agents of state policy. The state policy is to prescribe treatments not based upon the health interests of the individual patient, but based upon the perceived best interests of the state. The suppression of HCQ and IVM is one of the greatest tragedies and crimes of the modern era, Dr. Peter Breggin told me. Dr. Breggin, who has been called the conscience of psychiatry by author Candace Pert, is the author of Talking Back to Prozac and COVID-19 and the Global Predators. In Florida and South Carolina, Blue Cross Blue Shield, BCBS, sent mass mailings to physicians notifying them that BCBS would no longer pay insurance claims for IVM and threatened audits of any physician who wrote prescriptions for the drug. In January 2021, Syracuse, New York attorney Ralph Lurigo filed for an injunction on behalf of a critically ill hospital patient, the mother of one of his clients, against a local hospital that was resisting family requests to treat her with ivermectin. A state superior court judge immediately granted Larigo's request. Within 12 hours of taking ivermectin, the dying woman miraculously began to recover. 2 weeks later, Larigo obtained a second injunction for a similarly situated client, who also made a preternatural recovery. When local news organizations reported Larigo's IVM victories, his law office telephone began ringing off the hook. Within a few weeks, he was working 20-hour days struggling to keep up, with a new cottage industry filing injunctions in New York and Ohio courts to help dying patients get access to ivermectin. To date, Larigo has been in 30 courts. The people who I've been able to get the ivermectin to on time have all lived. The others have died. He has obtained dozens of injunctions for patients, precipitating a host of sudden recoveries. The hospitals are so arrogant, they are letting the people die. They get $37,000 to put them on the vent, and they just let them die. Merck's steps to kill its baby. During the early industry offensive against HCQ, one of the drug's principal manufacturers, Sanofi, suddenly detected safety concerns with HCQ that it had never noticed during decades of profitable pre-pandemic production. In a remarkable coincidence, on February 4, 2021, Merck similarly discovered a concerning lack of safety data in the majority of studies regarding IVM. Merck was ivermectin's original manufacturer and had formerly boasted of ivermectin as its wonder drug. During the 40 years that it marketed the drug worldwide, Merck had never spoken of these worrisome safety signals. Since 1987, Merck has given billions of doses to the developing world for scabies, river blindness, lymphatic filariasis, elephantiasis, and assorted parasites without any safety alarms. In 2016, Merck distributed 900 million doses in Africa alone. The drug is safe and has minor side effects, a Merck spokesman said at the time. Unlike previous treatments, which had serious, sometimes fatal side effects, ivermectin is safe and can be used on a wide scale. It is also a very effective treatment and has single-handedly transformed the lives of millions of people. What prompted Merck's sudden safety concerns? Merck's exclusive ivermectin patent rights expired in 1996, and dozens of generic drug companies now produce IVM for about 40 cents a dose, badly diminishing ivermectin's profit profile for Merck. Furthermore, only 10 days before Merck discovered its concerns about IVM, Merck signed a manufacturing partnership for the Novavax and Emergent BioSolutions COVID vaccine as it moved into final trials. Furthermore, in December 2020, Merck had announced a $356 million supply deal by which NIAID agreed to purchase 60 to 100,000 doses of an experimental COVID pill called MK7110. Merck paid $425 million to buy the Oncoimmune company, which developed the drug as part of the deal. Bill Gates' quasi-governmental organization, the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative, IAVI, agreed to distribute the product in developing nations. But most importantly, ivermectin is also a low-profit competitor for another new Merck product for COVID-19. A high-cost antiviral drug, molnupiravir, for which Merck had the highest financial ambitions. Ironically, molnupiravir, a copycat formula, utilized an identical mechanism of action as ivermectin. That drug will retail at around $700 per course, but only if Merck can kill its cheap rival. It's worth a moment to consider molnupiravir's pedigree. Because the drug emerged from a shadowy black market of spies, pharmaceutical mountebanks, biosecurity profiteers, and Pentagon contractors who played key roles in militarizing and monetizing the COVID pandemic, and whom you will meet later in this book. The CIA officer and bioweapons developer Michael Callahan, one of Molnupiravir's key patrons, has dubbed this group of shady bioweapons operators as his secret handshake club. Molnupiravir is a protease inhibitor that mimics the antiviral properties of ivermectin. Unlike ivermectin, molnupiravir showed safety signals so alarming that some of its co-developers at Emory University protested its introduction into human phase 1 trials. Among other problems, they cite the possibility that it will cause birth defects. Callahan's boss, bioweapons enthusiast and former DHHS Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, Robert Kadlec, MD, an unabashed gain-of-function promoter with military and intelligence agency pedigrees, who built his career profiting from hyped pandemics, almost single-handedly created the $7 billion National Strategic Stockpile and runs it as a private fiefdom to enrich his friends and connections. Kadlec also runs the super-secretive P3CO committee inside of NIH, which greenlights and never denies Tony Fauci's gain-of-function bioweapons research projects. Gain-of-function refers to experiments that intentionally modify a pathogen to create the ability to cause or worsen disease, enhance transmissibility, and or create novel strains with potential to cause global spread in humans. One of Kadlec's many dodgy business partners is John Clarici, a Washington lawyer, lobbyist, an artful rogue who almost single-handedly created the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, BARDA, a new agency formed after 9/11 under the HHS Office of the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, ASPR, of which Kadlec was director during the Trump administration. BARDA is a taxpayer-infused investment fund that purchases and develops technology for Kadlec's strategic stockpile and postulated future threats. Clarici boasts that if someone wants to get BARDA money, they've got to go through me. His LinkedIn profile crows that John has assisted over 36 companies in obtaining nearly $3 billion in funding and research for development and procurement of public health countermeasures for the federal government, including the majority of the awards made under Project BioShield, the U.S. government's initiative for preparing the nation against biological attacks. Clarici brandishes also his innovative authorship of the PREP Act, a corporate welfare boondoggle that bestows protection against liability upon manufacturers and providers of vaccines and all other pandemic countermeasures to shield them from lawsuits. Under the PREP Act, no matter how negligently or reprehensibly the company behaves, and no matter how grievous the injuries to their victims, the companies cannot be held liable unless the injured party can prove willful misconduct. Even then, a lawsuit can commence only with the approval of the Secretary of HHS. The Defense Threat Reduction Agency, DTRA, another Pentagon bioweapons agency and corporate welfare program for military contractors, provided $10 million in 2013 and 2015 to Emory University to develop molnupiravir as a veterinary drug for horses against equine encephalitis. NIAID contributed $19 million, then transferred the toxic drug in a golden handoff to Merck and another drug company, Ridgeback Biotherapeutics, along with a guaranteed market and rich returns. As we shall see in later chapters, DTRA was a major funder of EcoHealth Alliance, Peter Daszak's charity that sought out lethal animal viruses around the world, retrieving the most deadly for the Pentagon. In June 2021, as FDA and NIAID were cranking up the medical cartel's opposition against IVM. The HHS agreed to purchase 1.7 million five-day treatment courses of molnupiravir from Merck for $1.2 billion. When the drug wins FDA approval, a contingency that can be virtually guaranteed while Anthony Fauci is Washington's drug kingmaker. On June 9, 2021, President Biden dutifully reiterated the U.S. government's commitment to procure approximately 1.7 million courses of the NIAID-funded drug from Merck. BARDA collaborated with a confederacy of other shady Defense Department operatives, including the DoD Joint Program Executive Office for Chemical, Biological, Radiological, and Nuclear Defense, JPEO-CBRND, and the Army Contracting Command on the $1.2 billion purchase. Not only was the drug developed with taxpayer money, but its $712 per dose price to the taxpayer is 40 times more than Merck's $17.64 cost of production. Merck, which expects to make $7 billion per year on the new blockbuster, saw its stock price spike on news of the government contract and after President Biden's televised plug. With so many powerful and important godfathers, and the United States president fully committed, it would be unprecedented for FDA to deny authorization to molnupiravir, no matter how disastrous the clinical trial results may be. Merck is so certain of FDA's approval that by September 2020, it was already scaling up manufacturing, even though its clinical trials are still underway. Merck announced in October 2021 that molnupiravir had shown game-changing results against COVID in clinical trials, reducing hospitalizations and deaths by 50% against a placebo. "The news of the efficacy of this particular antiviral is obviously very good news," trumpeted the White House chief medical advisor and pharma spokesperson Anthony Fauci. "The FDA will look at the data and in the usual very efficient, very effective way, will evaluate the data as quickly as they possibly can, and then it will be taken from there." Horse drugs. As Merck stood poised to release its new horse drug, molnupiravir, onto the market, the other U.S. behemoth, Pfizer, was racing Merck neck and neck with its own antiviral pill, PF0732133-2, an ivermectin knockoff that is so similar to IVM, except of course in price point, that critics call it Pfizermectin. Like IVM, it is also a protease-inhibiting antiparasitic. With these two new drugs teed up for a simultaneous FDA approval, the entire medical media cartel launched a final coordinated coup de grace against IVM, branding it a dangerous horse drug. Mainstream media outlets across the U.S. and overseas obediently ran stories promoting the horse medicine propaganda scam. In late August 2021, NIH, FDA, and CDC launched an innovative new campaign to slander ivermectin as a horse dewormer that only deluded, foolhardy nincompoops would consume. Picking up on those themes, The Independent asked, "Ivermectin, why are U.S. anti-vaxxers touting a horse dewormer as a cure for COVID?" Business Insider warned that people were poisoning themselves trying to treat or prevent COVID-19 with a horse deworming drug. Associated Press assures readers that no evidence ivermectin is a miracle drug against COVID-19. On August 15th, the FDA instructed on its website, "You are not a horse." In an August 21st, 2021 Twitter post, the FDA expanded the theme, "You are not a horse, You are not a cow. Seriously, y'all, stop it. The White House and CNN also urged listeners that they should avoid veterinary products. CDC joined the chorus, warning Americans to not risk their health consuming a horse dewormer. Elsewhere on its website, the CDC urged black and brown human immigrants to load up on ivermectin. All Middle Eastern, Asian, North African, Latin American, and Caribbean refugees should receive presumptive therapy with ivermectin, 2 doses, 200 micrograms per kilogram orally once a day for 2 days before departure to the United States. Whether this was intended to deworm them or to prevent COVID transmission during travel to the U.S. is unclear. Only GreenMedInfo, a health news and information site, saw through the chicanery, a media smear campaign timed to clear market for Pfizer's ivermectin clone drug, which will be hailed as a miracle. Demonizing IVM as a horse drug was, of course, ironic, given that NIAID initially developed Merck's replacement therapy, molnupiravir, as a horse drug. Furthermore, calling ivermectin a horse drug is like calling antibiotics a horse drug. Many long-established basic drugs are, of course, effective in all mammals because they work on our shared biology. But facts be damned, media companies called all hands on deck to push these stories. Ivermectin's devastating effectiveness against infections from parasites and solid 40-year history of proven safety have made it also the world's most prescribed veterinary medicine. But the Nobel Prize was for those billions of times it helped humans, and the government's silly safety warnings were, of course, specious. Compare ivermectin's safety record to Dr. Fauci's 2 chosen COVID remedies, remdesivir, which hospital nurses have dubbed "Run, Death is Near," and the COVID vaccines. Over 30 years, ivermectin has been associated with only 379 reported deaths, an impressive death-per-dose reporting ratio of 1 per 10,584,408. In contrast, over the 18 months since remdesivir received an EUA, about 1.5 million patients have received remdesivir, with 1,499 deaths reported, a dire 1 per 1,000 DD ratio. Meanwhile, among recipients of COVID jabs in the U.S. during the 10 months following their rollout, some 17,000 deaths have occurred following vaccination, a reported DD ratio of 1 per 13,250. Ivermectin, therefore, is thousands of times safer than remdesivir and COVID vaccines. The science also indicates that it is far more effective than either. Dr. Fauci himself took early charge of spreading the rumor that ivermectin was poisoning deluded Americans. "Don't do it," he told pharma propagandist Jake Tapper of CNN in an August 29, 2021 interview. "There is no evidence whatsoever that that works, and it could potentially have toxicity, with people who have gone to poison control centers because they've taken the drug at a ridiculous dose and wind up getting sick. There is no clinical evidence that indicates that this works." Jake Tapper, who has sounded progressively more like a pharma rep than a journalist as the lockdown dragged on, slavishly parroted Dr. Fauci's new talking point. "Poison control centers are reporting that their calls are spiking in places like Mississippi and Oklahoma because some Americans are trying to use an anti-parasite horse drug called ivermectin to treat coronavirus to prevent contracting coronavirus." It mattered not that both Mississippi and Oklahoma officials quickly denied that anyone in their state had been hospitalized for IVM poisoning. An AP story claimed that 70% of calls to the Mississippi Poison Control Center were for ivermectin overdoses. It turned out perhaps 2% of calls were. Barely anyone saw the grudging retractions. Additional news articles reported alleged rises in ivermectin-related overdoses in other states. These, too, were exaggerated. Kentucky Poison Control acknowledged a slight uptick in calls about veterinary ivermectin overdose, about 6 per year compared to an average of 1 per year. Despite claims of mass poisoning, the media could not find a single case of IVM leading to death or hospitalization. People were not dying from horse ivermectin overdoses. They were certainly not dying from appropriately dosed and prescribed oral ivermectin. But many were dying from untreated COVID-19. Bill Gates's surrogate group, Gavi, asked in a press release, "How did a drug many use to treat parasites in cows come to be of interest to doctors treating humans with COVID-19. The characterization was especially insincere. Gates Foundation and Gavi were, at that moment, distributing millions of doses of ivermectin annually to Indian children for filariasis and to Africans for river blindness and filariasis. It wasn't just the safe drug and caring physicians that were under attack. When, in September 2021, the popular comedian and podcast host Joe Rogan announced he'd kicked COVID in just a few days using a cocktail of drugs including ivermectin, the global press, government, and pharmaceutical interests coalesced to denounce, vilify, and gaslight him. NPR, which has taken $3 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, jumped on the dog pile and deceptively insinuated that Rogan took horse-level doses. Joe Rogan has told his Instagram followers he has been taking ivermectin, a deworming veterinary drug formulated for use in cows and horses to help fight the coronavirus. The Food and Drug Administration has warned against taking the medication, saying animal doses of the drug can cause nausea, vomiting, and in some cases severe hepatitis. But Rogan never took veterinary ivermectin paste. Rogan said he had talked with multiple doctors who advised him to take the drug. He followed their advice, and he got well remarkably quickly. Rolling Stone, the one-time banner of the counterculture, had by 2021 devolved into a reliable mouthpiece for medical cartel orthodoxies. In October 2021, Rolling Stone announced that it had removed from its website a 2005 article linking mercury and vaccines to brain injuries in children. Rolling Stone also reported that Oklahomans overdosing on ivermectin horse dewormer were causing emergency rooms to be so backed up that gunshot victims were having hard times getting access to health facilities. An accompanying photo purported to depict a long line of ambulatory gunshot casualties seeking hospital admission to an Oklahoma emergency room, already filled to capacity with dingbats poisoned by a horse dewormer. The Rolling Stone story spread like wildfire among the world's reigning media outlets, including the Daily Mail, Business Insider, Newsweek, Yahoo News, The Guardian, and The Independent, many of which rely on Gates Foundation largesse. MSNBC's news host Rachel Maddow told her audience that patients are overdosing on ivermectin, backing up rural Oklahoma hospitals' ambulances. "Ivermectin is meant for a full-size horse," she explained. She repeated that the victims first gullibly swallowed the false claims of anti-vaxxers before guzzling down horse dewormer. The ERs are so backed up that gunshot victims were having hard times getting to facilities where they can get definitive care and be treated. The story, of course, was fraud. Days later, Oklahoma's Sequoia Northeastern Health System posted a categorical denial on its website, dismissing the entire story as mere fabrication. That Rolling Stone picture of the long lines was an Associated Press stock photo from the previous January, a photo of people waiting in line to get vaccines. As it turns out, not a single patient has been treated in Oklahoma for ivermectin overdose. Instead of retracting the article, Rolling Stone simply posted an attention-dodging update at the top of the article reporting the hospital's denial. The Guardian similarly published a nondescript update at the bottom of its article. The FDA doubled down with the claim that IVM may cause serious harm, is highly toxic, and may cause seizures, coma, and even death. As we shall see, these kinds of warnings are far more applicable to COVID shots. The CDC issued an emergency memo on August 26, 2021, warning doctors and pharmacists not to prescribe ivermectin. As molnupiravir's debut approached, the war against IVM escalated. On September 23rd, the Colorado Department of Law issued a cease and desist order and fined a Loveland Medical Clinic $40,000 for marketing and overstating the effectiveness of ivermectin. And pharmacists still willing to dispense ivermectin faced a new problem. The wholesalers began dribbling out a few pills at a time, but not enough for even one prescription per week. All their diabolical tricks seemed the work of winks and nods and a powerful hidden hand, with no corporation or federal agency taking clear responsibility for carrying out a deliberate policy to suppress a life-saving drug. On September 28th, the New York Times introduced a new tactic, reporting that the demand for ivermectin among the crackpots trying to treat COVID had created a shortage for veterinary purposes, warning that any day now, animals might begin to suffer. Peter McCullough laughs at the propaganda. Ivermectin is a molecule that is miraculously effective against parasites and viral infections along multiple pathways and mechanisms of action. It's a molecule. It doesn't care if it's used in a horse, or a cow, or a human. The rules of physics and chemistry are the same across species. Pierre Corey concurs. Ivermectin has multiple properties. It operates against COVID along a multitude of separate pathways. In addition to being antiparasitic, it also has potent antiviral properties and even protects against SARS-CoV-2 spike protein damage. The osteopath Dr. Joseph Mercola observed, "This idea that ivermectin is a horse dewormer that poses a lethal risk to humans is pure horse manure, shoveled at us in an effort to dissuade people from using a safe and effective drug against COVID-19. The intent is clear. What our so-called health agencies and the media are trying to do is confuse people into thinking of ivermectin as a veterinary drug, which simply isn't true. Ultimately, what they're trying to do is back up the big pharma narrative that the only thing at your disposal is the COVID shot." 4. Remdesivir. Anthony Fauci needed to use all his moxie and all his esoteric bureaucratic maneuvers, mastered during his half-century at NIH, to win FDA's approval for his vanity drug, remdesivir. Remdesivir has no clinical efficacy against COVID, according to every legitimate study. Worse, it is deadly poisonous, an expensive poison at $3,000 for treatment. In fact, remdesivir's wholesale cost is roughly 1,000 times more costly than hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. The challenge required Dr. Fauci to first sabotage HCQ and IVM. Under federal rules discussed earlier, FDA's recognition of HCQ and IVM efficacy would automatically kill remdesivir's ambitions for EUA designation. And even if Dr. Fauci somehow finagled an FDA license for remdesivir, demand for the product, which doctors were administering late in the disease, as it had to be given through an IV in the hospital, would plummet if either HCQ or IVM stopped the COVID-19 infections early. Why would Dr. Fauci care to undermine any medicine that might compete with remdesivir? Might it have something to do with NIAID and CDC, having just spent $79 million developing remdesivir for Gilead, a company in which the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation owns a $6.5 million stake. The BMGF is engaged in other large drug development deals with the company, including a co-funded $55 million investment in a malaria treatment being developed by Lyndra Therapeutics. Gates has also funded the promotion of Gilead's Truvada in Kenya. Another Gilead partner, the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, Maryland, USA MRIID, where the drug was studied in monkeys, also contributed millions to remdesivir's development. At the outset of the coronavirus plague, remdesivir was just another pharma-owned molecule that FDA had never approved as safe and efficacious for any purpose. In 2016, remdesivir demonstrated middling antiviral properties against Zika, but the disease disappeared before the expensive non-remedy got traction. After the Zika threat vanished, NIAID put some $6.9 million into identifying a new pandemic against which to deploy remdesivir. In 2018, Gilead entered remdesivir in a NIAID-funded clinical trial against Ebola in Africa. This is how we know that Anthony Fauci was well aware of remdesivir's toxicity when he orchestrated its approval for COVID patients. NIAID sponsored that project. Dr. Fauci had another NIAID-incubated drug, ZMapp, in the same clinical trial, testing efficacy against Ebola alongside two experimental monoclonal antibody drugs. Researchers plan to administer all four drugs to Ebola patients across Africa over a period of 4 to 8 months. However, 6 months into the Ebola study, the trial's safety review board suddenly pulled both remdesivir and ZMapp from the trial. Remdesivir, it turned out, was hideously dangerous. Within 28 days, subjects taking remdesivir had lethal side effects, including multiple organ failure, acute kidney failure, septic shock, and hypotension, and 54% of the remdesivir group died, the highest mortality rate among the four experimental drugs. Anthony Fauci's drug ZMapp ran up the second highest body count at 44%. NIAID was the primary funder of this study, and its researchers published the bad news about remdesivir in the New England Journal of Medicine in December 2019. By then, COVID-19 was already circulating in Wuhan. But 2 months later, on February 25, 2020, Dr. Fauci announced with great fanfare that he was enrolling hospitalized COVID patients in a clinical trial to study remdesivir's efficacy. For important context, this was a month before the WHO declared the new pandemic, a time that there were only 14 confirmed COVID cases in the United States, most from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. These individuals were among the first wave of COVID-19 hospitalizations from whom NIAID recruited the 400 U.S. volunteers for Dr. Fauci's remdesivir trial. Dr. Fauci's press release said only that remdesivir has shown promise in animal models for treating Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS. It's unclear, then, if NIAID informed these frightened souls that less than a year earlier, a safety review board had deemed remdesivir unacceptably toxic. Its deadly effect on patients aside, remdesivir was a perfect strategic option for Dr. Fauci. Optics required that NIH devote some resources to antiviral therapeutic drugs. Critics would complain if he spent billions on vaccines and nothing on therapeutics. However, any licensed, repurposed antiviral that was effective against COVID for prevention or early treatment, like IVM or HCQ, could kill his entire vaccine program because FDA wouldn't be able to grant his jabs emergency use authorization. Remdesivir, however, was an IV remedy, appropriate only for use on hospitalized patients in the late stages of illness. It would therefore not compete with vaccines, allowing Dr. Fauci to support it without compromising his core business. Furthermore, while HCQ and IVM were off-patent and available generically, remdesivir was in the sweet spot of still being on-patent. The potential profit upside was impressive. Remdesivir cost Gilead $10 per dose to manufacture, but by granting Gilead an EUA, regulators could force private insurers, Medicare, and Medicaid to fork over around $3,120 per treatment, hundreds of times the cost of the drug. Gilead predicted remdesivir would bring in $3.5 billion in 2020 alone. Dr. Fauci did not suddenly get the idea that remdesivir might work against coronavirus in January 2020. In one of his many extraordinary feats of uncanny foresight, beginning in 2017, Dr. Fauci paid $6 million to his gain-of-function guru Ralph Baric, a University of North Carolina microbiologist, to accelerate remdesivir as a coronavirus remedy at China's biosecurity laboratory in Wuhan. Baric used coronavirus cultures obtained from bat caves by Chinese virologists working with Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance, another recipient of Dr. Fauci's funding. Dr. Fauci demonstrated his personal interest in those experiments by dispatching his most trusted deputies, Hugh Auchincloss in 2018, and then Cliff Lane in 2020, to negotiate with the Chinese government and to supervise Baric's experiments at the Wuhan lab and elsewhere in China. Baric claimed that his mouse studies showed remdesivir impeded SARS replication, suggesting that it might inhibit other coronaviruses. Chinese researchers at the Wuhan lab and China's Military Medicine Institute of the People's Liberation Army Academy of Military Science submitted their own patent application for remdesivir. China's military brass said the joint patent application was aimed at protecting China's national interests. Early in March 2020, the Gates Foundation bankrolled $125 million of tax-deductible grants to support drug makers to develop coronavirus treatments. Gates and or his foundation had large equity stakes in many of the pharmaceutical companies that received these funds, including Gilead. On April 24, 2020, Gilead's volunteer spokesperson Bill Gates declared, "For the novel coronavirus, the leading drug candidate in this category is remdesivir from Gilead." For HCQ, Dr. Fauci demanded well-designed, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials, and he warned against the use of IVM for treatment. In contrast, Fauci green-lighted remdesivir, following studies in which the control group did not receive a real placebo. Instead, Fauci's researchers used no placebo in the more severely ailing patients and gave the remaining patients an active comparator containing the same treatment protocol agents as used in the remdesivir arm, except for substituting sulfabutyl for remdesivir as the test agent. Utilization of so-called toxic or spiked placebos, also known as faucebos, is a fraudulent gimmick that Dr. Fauci and his drug researchers have pioneered over 40 years to conceal adverse side effects of toxic drugs for which they seek approval.